think about Mike Tyson in the ring, he was up here, but outside the ring.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African peoples, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation, Ashe. Ashe. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. My name is William Rogers, and you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. Thank all of you for joining us here this evening. We have a very special tribute that we would like to do this evening. One of the great brothers of the African world has transitioned to the ancestral realm, and we want to pay tribute to him tonight, as well as just talk about that strong African leadership that is so necessary in our community today. So we thank you. We are here every Tuesday evening. From 8 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, to 10 o'clock p.m. We are also on other times of the week. We are on a Thursday program we call The Warrior's Way. We have another program on Saturday afternoon called Black Sister Talk with Sister LaWanda Chambers, and then there is a program at 6 with the Milwaukee Council of Elders, and they are discussing things that are relative to our community that the elders can involve themselves in. So we'll talk more about those later on at the top of the hour, but right now we want to get into this great discussion. Helping me this evening with a tribute is my dear friend and brother who has been with us here at the Black Reality Think Tank many, many, many times. His name is Dr. Bruce Bridges. And Dr. Bridges is here. He was the owner of one of the most fantastic bookstores that I have ever opened the doors and walked in, a bookstore in Durham, North Carolina, called The No Books. And so he's here, and he's going to be helping me pay tribute to my dear, dear brother. His name was Dr. Kwabena Fahim Ashanti. Dr. Kwabena Fahim Ashanti. A brilliant scholar, a powerful African brother who understood the roots of African life and system. And we're going to talk about Alula's accomplishments today. And it's not so much to do a lot of, just bragging and so forth. We want to really look at the value, the impact that Dr. Ashanti's work left us. And he was a quiet brother. He didn't necessarily do a lot of parading. He's been in several interviews. He's been in conferences. People know him in that way. But still, he left a legacy that maybe a lot of our young people don't know or won't know. And so those of us who are in education, those of us who are still out here teaching, his vision can be a very powerful tool that we can use. And he was very famous for a document that we're going to talk about in a little while. We'll wait and let Dr. Bridges come on, and we'll do that. So I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right on into this discussion, and we want to open this up to him and let Dr. Bridges come on and give us that preliminary introduction of our brother, and then let's get into a discussion. I see there are a lot of you here from his hometown that are online right now. And we would love to have you make tribute, just say a few words in the relationship that you may have had with Dr. Ashanti. So we look forward to you doing that. Yeah, we look forward to you doing that. So please, please, ladies and gentlemen, at any point, chime in if you'd like to say something about our dear brother. So with that, Dr. Bruce Bridges, how are you doing this evening?
I'm okay, Dr. Rogers.
Great.
I'm okay.
Great.
Tap to you and all the brothers and sisters. I'm fine, brother.
That's good. That's good. Well, Dr. Bridges, we've got a powerful brother that we both have lost, that were friends. We were personal friends to him. He was my classmate. We were members of the 1962 Hillside High School class. And we have talked many times after those years. We have talked many times after those years, and he is just brilliant. And I didn't meet him later until after our high school career, until I came to your bookstore one day and walked in there, and there he was. And we embraced and talked and changed numbers, and we kept in contact consistently after that. And so Nevertheless, let's get started. So, Dr. Bridges, why don't you open up and give our audience a little bit of a preliminary intro of the work of this great man.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Let me see. I'm trying to figure out where to...
Well, take your time. You know, we can be freelance with this. It doesn't have to be anything formal. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But because I know we have a lot of people on who can help us, but let me just talk about my experiences from the very beginning with Dr. Ashanti. I'm sure there are some people who are on who you'll get to who can go back further than I can with him. But I first met Dr. Ashanti in about the year of around 1977 or 1978. And we were both on the faculty at North Carolina Central University in Durham, North Carolina. He was on the third floor in the education building there at North Carolina Central University in Durham, North Carolina, that great historical black college. And he was on the third floor in the psychology department, which was at one end of the hall. And I was in the geography department, which was at the other end of the hall. And so I used to see him coming in and going to class, and I'd see him sometimes walking past my class when I was teaching, or sometimes if I had to get up and the restroom was past his class, so I'd sometimes pass his class and going and coming that way. And so we saw each other a lot in that respect. And then one day, this is when I really first became introduced to him, I believe. Yeah, that's right. I don't think I even knew him too much until then. I was teaching in my class, and I can't exactly remember what I was talking about. But whatever it was something that that interested Dr. Ashanti, and I saw him pass my class when I was teaching, and then as I kept speaking to the class, I see him. He came back and stood right out in front of my classroom, and was just listening to what I was teaching, and then after class. He went on about his business and listened to a little bit of me, but then after class he said, "Man, I really like what you're teaching there." He said, "You know, that's down my line." I said, "What you mean?" He said, "Well, you were talking some African history." He said, "I know you're teaching geography, but you were talking African history." I said, "Yeah, because I said we're African people, and these students here at North Carolina Central University probably won't get it anywhere else." Too much, except maybe a little bit in the history department. But anyway, so he liked the fact that I was teaching African history in the geography class. And then he said, "Why don't you come sit in on my class sometimes, because I'm doing the same thing." I said, "Oh, yeah?" So when I didn't have a class, oftentimes, Bill, I would go and sit in on Dr. Shanti's class and listen to what he was talking. And he was talking not African history as I was, but he was talking from his perspective. And that was psychology. He was talking about African psychology and the African way of thinking and African psyche, and talking about the African mind and how the African mind grew and developed and some of those kinds of things. And so what was going on, which I didn't realize at the time, and which I always like to say to any of our young scholars or young people, period, or people who are teaching and who are doing anything in the system, whatever it is that we learn and that we study from European colonizers, our white people, our teachers, because that's what most of them have been. If they have not taught us directly, it may have come through an African-American teacher, but still the basis of our education in America is Eurocentric. And so I have always thought that we need to take what we learn from them and turn it around and make it focus in on us and show how we fit into that particular sphere of knowledge. And that's what Dr. Ashanti and I were doing, and we'll talk about it too a little later with African leadership, because that's what they did. So that's what Dr. Shanti was. He was teaching psychology, but he wasn't talking about a whole lot of Freud and Pavlov's dog,
right,
and
right.
A whole lot of Mendel and a lot of the other psychologists that we know about. But he was talking from an African center perspective. And when he did talk about the European psychologists, he always would bend it, though, to make it fit the situation of Africans in America and throughout the world. And that's the same thing that I was doing. So that was our first meeting.
Great, great. And, you know, and that's a powerful meeting, because you're right. his work in psychology is really what stood out, and that was the tool, and that's what we want to talk a little bit about tonight. I'm not a psychologist. I know you're not, but there are some unique.
No, I'm not, and don't claim to be. But you know, since you mentioned it too, I wanted to ask you, and or maybe somebody in our audience can ask, because I thought about it after we talked earlier. I don't know what and where it is that Ashanti first got turned on to that African consciousness. I thought about it, and I'm not just doing it for the show. I really would like to know. Maybe somebody's in the audience who can. But I know he went into the service after graduation from NCCU undergraduate.
Right.
He went into the Army, I believe.
Vietnam War.
Went to the Army.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so maybe that's where it happened, because when he came back, you know, he kind of went through an evolution. So anyway, I don't know, but maybe that's something somebody can answer.
Yeah.
How he first, you know, came in touch with it, you know?
Well, you know, that's interesting.
I know how I came in touch with it, and whenever, and you, if you think about it, you know how you first were put in touch with African thinking and African-centered consciousness, but I really don't know how he came into contact with it. But I do know that when we were on that hall on the third floor of the education building, right there next to the women's gym at Central on one side, and the other side the men's gym at education building, he was thinking from an African perspective.
Exactly. And you know, the thing about it, it's interesting about that, it doesn't have to be anything real formal in terms of that introduction. It can start sometime from a speech. When I really knew that Ashanti was working in the African centered community, is I met him at an ASCAC convention, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. I was at a convention and he was there and I saw him, and I said, "Oh my goodness!" You know. And so again, we embraced and shook hands, man, and said, "I'm so glad to see you." You know, you into this? He said, "Oh yeah." He said, "As a matter of fact, I'm doing a paper." And so I said, well, I will be at your conference, at your session. But I think a lot of what he told me after that in some telephone conversations that we had is that, you know, it was at the time the 60s was really an educational revolution. You know that, you know, with the coming in of the Black Studies movement and Dr. Ashanti was at the University of Pittsburgh. And in that whole area of Philadelphia and New York and D.C., there was a revolution going on. There was people, Marlena Karenga had began to emerge, and the Malefia Santis had began to emerge. And these people, these brothers and sisters were powerful. Queen Mother Moore had began to come out. They were talking about reparations and things like that. And he told me that one of the first books that he read was The Black Jacobins.
You know, I'm glad I asked you that question. See, I didn't know this. Go ahead. See,
yeah,
this is
and,
right.
And, okay. And that book spells out the horror of the slave system. And as a matter of fact, he said that that was what he used to begin to do his work on the document that we're going to talk about, that he created. That's what spurred him to do that. But and myself was the same way. I had moved to New York right after high school. We both graduated in 62. I don't know where he went after that. I don't know quite sure where he went for the next 4 or 5 years. His interests, you know, I ran, my indoctrination was going on Lenox Avenue to what was Michelle's bookstore on Saturday afternoon, and listening to Malcolm X and to Louis Farrakhan and some of those brothers and sisters down there arguing and discussing and talking about Black history. And I remember going into that bookstore. At that time, I was 18 years old, 19. And I remember that the owner of the bookstore asked me, was I looking for anything specific? I said, no, I was just kind of browsing. He said, well, I tell you what, I'm going to give you two books. I want you to read them. Go home and read them. He gave me a book by an author named J.A. Rogers. It was called The Five Negro Presidents. And he gave me another book called The 100 Amazing Facts of the Negro by J.A. Rogers. And when I got home and I read that and saw some of all that history stuff in there, I couldn't believe it. And that anything like that had existed. Because, you know, we lived in the South. And Dr. Ashanti talked about, you know, in Durham, and there wasn't a lot of stuff for us there in reference to the African-centered perspective. you know. So that's how I got mine, and from what I gather from him and in the conversations we had, that's how he got his. Now, he did a lot of reading. He read a lot of stuff, just like you did back in those years. I read a lot of stuff. I used to read Autobiography of Malcolm X. That turned me on to that whole African-centered movement and idea. So you're right, Dr. Bridges. It's sort of like your rites of passage. Your academic rites of passage takes you through that. And clearly, for me, I think the strongest part was listening to Malcolm X in Harlem speak on that corner. And at that time, I didn't even know who he was that much. But I would sit there and listen to him talk about it. And then again, reading the Muhammad Speaks newspaper is what it was called at the time, and looking at some of the articles that we did around that. Let me ask you, do you have any information on his academic development? You know, like I said, I know he went, his graduate degree was from the University of Pittsburgh. His undergrad was Central, wasn't it? Didn't he graduate from NC Central? Dr. Bridges?
Oh, I had my mute on. Okay, I'm off now. I'm just talking so you couldn't hear me. Okay. I think, yeah, you're right. He went to NCCU, and then I think he went into the service. And I also let a friend of ours, too, Bill James Yvonne, know about the program, and he said he's going to call, and he can fill in some of those gaps because he was there at the same time at Central, James Yvonne was. But I think he told me that Dr. Ashanti went to Central undergraduate, graduated. Then after that, went into the service. And went to Vietnam, and I'm going back to my question, how did he wake up? That might have been enough for him to wake up right there, but when he sent the fellas over to Vietnam, you know. But he went to Vietnam and then came back and worked on a master's degree at NCCU. I think that's the way it went. But like I said, maybe James Yvonne or maybe Rhonda might be on, his wife. She may be on. She might can fill that in. But I think that's the way it went. And I think that would also contribute to my question. Vietnam may have been an awakening for him, too, like it was for a lot of brothers when they went over to Vietnam.
Right. And I just want to kind of let our listening audience know, too, that the reason why we are doing this is because Dr. Ashanti left a educational legacy with us that's going to be around for a while. And we wanted to, and a lot of times we don't do that. You know, one of the things that we do here at the Black Reality Think Tank is we try to look at things that people are not readily available to us. It'd be very difficult, and we're going to talk about some of his books. It's going to be very difficult to purchase books of Dr. Ashanti because right now they are selling on Amazon and other places for $400 and $500 a book. So everybody's not going to have ability to access that. Some folk will. A lot of folk out there banking like that, they can go buy a $400 book. But we want to talk about some of that development and what it was specifically that he was doing and was trying to do, and which is the legacy he left us. And he joins into a powerful group of other brothers and sisters who were doing that. He was a member of the American Association of Black Psychologists. I know that. That was recently headed by Sister Malaya Cambone, who has a program on this network as well. And then her husband, Dr. Cambone, who is also new, Dr. Ashanti, and the work that he did, and they talked about that. Dr. Wade Nobles, educational psychology. Dr. Asa Hilliard, educational psychology. There's a legacy that those brothers and sisters left us, just like Dr. Hilliard left us with some powerful, powerful information that quite often we quote, and that and the reason that it's necessary to talk about it is that we've got to use it, Dr. Bridges. We got to use that. Now we can't give up. We can't stop. Like the elders group that we have on Saturday that does their show. These are mostly elder brothers and sisters that have been in education. And they have a little slogan that they used that they had been used. It said, "We're old school, but we ain't through yet." So we've got to do that. We've got to do that because right now our kids are not getting it, man. They're not getting it. You know that. They're not getting that in public schools anymore. you know, this virtual
and
learning.
They weren't getting in public schools when Dr. Ashanti came along.
That's right, exactly. You know, because I mean, I love Hillside High School. It was a powerful school. A lot of the teachers there that, you know, we knew personally and stuff like that, and they were doing their job, and I learned a lot. But they did not teach us. I didn't learn Marcus Garvey in high school. I didn't know anything about Malcolm X or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I didn't know anything about that. Queen Mother Moore and all of those that were around there that who were working. They didn't teach us that. That wasn't a part of the curriculum of Durham Public Schools. Exactly. So when you asked that question about Dr. Ashanti, where did he get that from? That's a good question, because we didn't get it in Durham Public School System. Didn't get it in North Carolina Central either, unfortunately. Except with specific.
We really didn't get it at North Carolina Central either. We didn't get it at high school. Then we'd go to the Negro College. We'd go from Negro High School with Negro Elementary, Negro Junior High, then Negro High School, then to the Negro College, and we still haven't got
right,
it.
Right, exactly. And see, this history is the history that empowers us. This is the history that develops the leadership that we are talking about. This is the history that makes that leadership critical. And if those leaders that are coming to the table, if they don't have that, then sometimes they have difficulty in having effective leadership. So with that, go right ahead, Dr. Bridges, and maybe in a few minutes we can, like I said, we do have some Durham people here online. I don't know if they want to say something now, but I don't want to interrupt your flow here. Why do you think it was important to pay tribute to Dr. Ashanti? Why do you personally think so?
I think you just said it is because of what he tried to do and what he did, actually, and his legacy and the things that he left behind for us as a people in the form of his, not just his activities, but especially the books that he left that we can still go back and pick up and read and learn from. Especially, of course, you know, he had the Voodoo and IQ, which I think was his first one. And then there was another one that you had mentioned earlier today. And go ahead, what was it?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Okay, I thought that I mentioned Voodoo and IQ, and then there was another one I thought you were about to say too that we talked about today, the psychology of the psychotechnology of brainwashing, which is the last one I remember. But there was another one after that, and you can probably fill that one in. But when I first met him, he was working on that Voodoo and IQ, and that's what. And you answered another question for me too when you said that he told you that he had read The Black Jacobins by C.L.R. James.
Right.
And by reading The Black Jacobins and C.L.R. James, that's a history of the Haitian Revolution.
That's exactly right.
And in understanding the Haitian Revolution, of course, that ties in with voodoo. Haiti, voodoo.
That's right. You see? That's right.
So, yeah, it's coming to me now. So I see how he made these connections, because he was always into voodoo. And I'll tell you something else that you definitely didn't know, but there was a man, Bill, who lived on Austin Avenue Road in Durham, North Carolina, and his name was Gus Meekins. Gus Meekins, and he used to have big rock, I think they were Rottweiler dogs in his yard, but he used to wear a band around his head and had long hair, kind of like a Native American.
Uh-huh.
And Ashanti used to go visit him, and we used to call Gus Meekins. I used to see him. I used to walk past his house sometimes. We called him the Root Doctor.
Wow.
And the Root Doctor, he lived right on Austin Avenue Road, and people would always say, well, if you want to get something done, you go to him, and he can work some roots for you. So I know, but Ashanti used to hang out and go visit him a lot. I do know that, because he used to tell me, I'm going by the Root Doctor's house, Gus Meekins, and talk to him a little bit. So he was mixing in roots from Gus Meekins and what he had learned about Haiti and voodoo in Haiti, and kind of put all that together. Then he came up with his book, Voodoo and IQ. And so I thought that was real interesting. And the psychotechnology of brainwashing, that came along a little bit later on.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a critical piece of our history that's missing, too, is the story of that lifestyle, you know, of the voodoo that operated every day in our community. And it was all around us. And actually, over the years, I have realized very heavily how it was operated and used in the South and in Durham. I remember that.
In Durham, that's right. Now, see, we'd have to go to somebody else who would know more about that, but I do remember growing up as a kid, and some of the parents would talk about go to so-and-so and get some rope. Bill, this is what they say. Now, I'm going to see if you remember this. Do you recall when they would say that so-and-so and so went down to South Carolina to see Dr. Buzzard?
Oh, yeah.
Get some roots.
Yes, indeed, because I went down there after I got older to see him. You know, I sure did. Yes, I did. But see, the thing is, this type of history was not available, and understandably so, because we, believe it or not, Durham is the Bible Belt. And you're in the Bible Belt. Christianity dominates, and that kind of stuff was not allowed or, not tolerated, or you were looked upon negatively if you were part of that. But it was African spirituality. That's really what it is.
We were talking about root workers and demonic and all that, witches. Right, that's right. But it's really African spirituality.
It's African spirituality. And that's what everybody has done. Everybody has those. And that's one of the geniuses of Dr. Ashanti's work, is that he understood that. And he was putting that into everyday operation. And it was doing it, and I don't want to jump too far ahead of us. He was doing it so powerfully that white folks sought him out to get him to come and help them.
You know what? That's right. I think even at the place out at Duke that you told me you used to go out on Maureen Road, he used to go there sometimes, didn't he?
Right. He told me, because at the time when he and I really had talked academically about some stuff, I had been into some of the, I had looked at some of those types of things in terms of my work. And what I was doing in graduate studies, and I had run across a Caucasian. Actually, it was Dr. Thorpe, early E.E. Thorpe at North Carolina Central, who probably was just in that same realm of things. And Dr. Ashanti knew Dr. Thorpe, too. But Dr. Sharp Thorpe told me about a Duke University professor whose name was J.B. Ryan. And Dr. J.B. Ryan ran a clinic out at Duke University, out on Maureen Road, called the Institute of Parapsychology. And parapsychology is that science, if you remember the movie Poltergeist, and those folk were coming out with machinery that was able to monitor and read. Could you please silence your mics just a bit? Thank you so much. I can hear you as you log in. Could you please silence your mic so we can hear you, be able to hear? Thank you so much. But Dr. J.B. Ryan was studying being able to monitor the parapsychology world and that spiritual realm of things. He felt that it could be measured. And so Duke bought it and brought him out there and put him in the institute. Well, Dr. Ashanti had told me many times that he'd been there and had conversations and discussions with Dr. Ryan. And so this work we're talking about is stuff that our people brought here on those ships that crossed the Atlantic. With them all chained down at the bottom of it. And a lot of times we ask ourselves, how could they have possibly survived that? And some of that type of science and spirituality is a good reason how they did that and how they were able to survive it. But that's another discussion for another show, because I do want to talk about that. And I am planning to have a program where we look at some of those early, as you call them, root doctors. But these were powerful men and women, and these people were in the forefront, but they just had to be quiet because a lot of times they encountered the church, and the church wasn't going to tolerate that. But when you listen to these blues singers and all of these blues singers, they were all
Robert
into the
Johnson,
African spiritual system. Yeah, I'm going to put a spell on you,
right.
And some of all that did it, and I remember the guy Sonny Boy Williams, the blues singer Sonny Boy Williams. Sonny Boy Williams was a root doctor, and some other things. But anyway, that's like I said, that's another discussion, and to do something. I'm on.
Well, Bill, we will.
Go right ahead.
I was going to say you want to go maybe go to some of our callers and get some of them in.
Let me go. Brother Timothy, you had asked, you said you wanted to say something.
I want to chime in, brother. You talk about Sonny Boy Williams. I learned about him from Hollingworth. Is he familiar with Hollingworth, blues man?
Yeah, these were the blues men that practiced the Badoon.
Well, I'm saying that I learned from Sonny Boy from Hollingworth, the blues thing from Chess Records, like Muddy Waters.
Yeah.
Sure. Let me get to my point. I'm going to say this to you, right, that it was people like you, Dr. Bridges, and Dr. Rise that broke the door open for us. Give you an example. When I came out of eighth grade, I used to always admire the Muslims on 52nd Street. You understand, and you know 52nd Street, Dr. Bridges. We had Hawking's Bookstore. We had Know Thyself. We had black bookstores in Philadelphia. And
right.
Philadelphia known to be a Muslim town. Let me give you an example. The slogan was in Philadelphia, no more gang war in 74, stay alive in 75, because black men were fighting each other across town. Different parts of Philadelphia, South Philly, West Philly, North Philly, and Germantown. So, but what they used to have was vans that would pick you up off the corner, and who helped to stop gang war? Jeremiah Shabazz and Sister Falaka Fatah, who was Congressman Shaka Fatah's mother. But those two stopped the gang violence in Philadelphia, and they would pick you up in vans and take you to the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremiah would say, you know what, the biggest, baddest gang in Philadelphia is the Nation of Islam.
Right, that's
I'm
true.
Saying that. That's right. See, here's the other thing. The other thing, he would turn brothers around. I mean, all you need is to get to the leader. Get to the leader, they're gonna follow the brother. And
right.
They would get everybody together, North Philly, West Philly, and South Philly. Oh, my God. So South Philly, you had Sam Christen. You had Jerry Irons in West Philly. You had Nooney Nins in North Philly. Oh, my God. So here's the thing. The thing is that the good thing about that is my advisor and teacher at West Philadelphia High School. We were known for our basketball. We were the best basketball team in the country with Gene Banks, Clarence Stillman, all the rest of those kids. But what we had was John Skeef, who was from Cheney University. And I was in 10th grade. He said to me, you look like somebody I know. I said, who's that? He said, are you related to Joyce Hannah? I said, that's my aunt. He said, I went to high school with your aunt. He said, what about older? I said, that's my aunt's older sister. That's my mom's older sister. He said, what? He said, I went to Cheney with your aunt. So he went to high school with one of my aunts, and he went to Cheney with my other one of my aunts. And John Skeef was fascinating. We had a good basketball team and a band. But John Skeef was a dashiki, and he taught black history. He taught black history, man. He taught Jerry Rice. He talked about the Jacobins, and I had a hard time at Cheney University.
And see, that's the way it had to come. There had to be individuals. Sometimes there were individuals who were educators
right.
that did that and taught.
But let me tell you about the rest of it. The rest of it was that. You probably don't know this guy. Adam Riffle became a criminal attorney. He went from Cheney to Howard. And him, the Kappas and Q's taught the cafeteria because they weren't teaching history. So they went to get Wade Wilson. So by the time I go to Lincoln, as a matter of fact, my high school English teacher, Miss Suber, she taught Raising a Son. She taught Richard Wright. I'm telling you, those things
wow.
that you're talking
okay.
about. Mm-hmm. We had him in high school. But let me get to my point.
Forget now, this is a tribute to a brother, but I know what you're doing. You're covering the spirit of that. Go right ahead.
That brother and you and Dr. Bruce broke it in for us. That's the whole point, to make the transition.
Right.
So by the time
right.
I got to Lincoln, everything was there. Kuma.
Right.
Langston Hughes, Roscoe Lee Brown. We heard about the names. We were actually there where they graduated from.
Mm-hmm.
So the transition was so great. You see
okay.
what I'm saying? So I'm going to give you an example that y'all broke it down for us and broke it in, and we were able to get it, and it was so comfortable.
Exactly.
Where y'all had to struggle to get it.
Exactly.
That's what I like.
That's good, Brother Timothy. Now we want to get to some of these Durham, North Carolina people who might. Well, thank you very much, Brother Timothy, for your call, though, and for being stay tuned with us. You've been with us all the time, so stay with us.
My family, man. This is my family. I ain't going nowhere.
Okay. All right. I love it. I think, Dr. Bridges, what is Devon's last four digits?
1508.
Yep, this is him. He's here. Brother Devon, how you doing?
How you doing, Brother Rogers? I'm just listening to the comments, and I'm in total shock.
Yep.
I'm over here living in a residence in Durham, North Carolina, that a civil rights activist used to live in.
Okay.
And I'm on Upson Street, and I'm in total shock. I got in my hand Recapturing the African Mind by Dr. Bruce Bridges.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
How far do you and Dr. Shanti go back, James?
We go back to Whitted School. I'm right two doors down from Whitted School, right?
Right, that's
now,
right.
In the old neighborhood. And,
that's right.
He was very, very encouraging. And, supportive. And I'm just in a state of total shock. I'm telling you that because I've got in my hand Recapturing the African Mind by Dr. Bruce Bridges.
Right on.
Okay, but now, Dr. Shanti, I know you all are very good friends, and we're doing it. I'm glad you called in, too. Now, was he athletic? Wasn't he athletic, too, James?
That's what I'm trying to get to. I was in total shock when I, encountered Dr. Shanti because he actually could play football. A lot of people don't even know that.
Right.
Yeah, he
right.
actually was a running back in football and a trackster.
Right. He's I remember on the track team. Yep.
Double first. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. All of that's real. And in my hand, like I said, I just happen to have Recapturing the African Mind by Dr. Bruce Bridges.
Well, you got the Bible in your hand then. That's all right.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm on Upson Street, two doors from where I first met Dr. Shanti. I'm almost certain it was at Wheeling School, but, somewhere I've got it in my mind that we met at Hillside.
Well, yeah. Stay tuned with us, James. We're glad you called in. We're going to go to somebody else from Durham, some more 919s, Bill. What you think?
Okay, that's good. I'm so glad because, we were all in that class of 62 together, him. We've got another Hillside graduate that was there in that class of 62 that might, that does remember a lot of. Now, we knew Dr. Ashanti as his name, his birth name, government name was Charles Davis.
I like that government name.
Yep, and so, but in the adult years, in the years after we left Hillside, I only knew him as Dr. Ashanti.
Bill, before you go to that next call, too, that's another good point, too, because he began to develop, and so he realized that the names that we wear are European names, and he wanted to get as close as he possibly could to his African identity.
Right.
And so he just he dropped that Charles, and I think he took on Kwabena, which I think was a title out of the Yoruba spiritual realm of thinking, and then he became the Ashanti from Ghana. So he really went through a development stage, though. So that's a good point. That
yes,
he got
did.
Rid of that
yes,
government name.
Yes, he did. And I just want to let our listeners know again that we're not just hero worshiping. We're talking about legacies that were left for us now to still carry. We can still carry on Dr. Ashanti's work in the ways that we can by introducing people to his writings and talking a little bit about the theories of the things that he talked about and the books that he wrote and what they mean and how they can be used today. A lot of our people are real traumatic. We're facing some heavy trauma, and we are under some heavy trauma now to the point that it's challenging us tremendously to keep our communities together and to to raise our children. So some of the work he was doing was attempt to address that in his logic and in his studies. And a lot of those brothers and sisters in the Association of Black Psychology are working diligently to do that. As I said, we have the president of the Association of Black Psychologists has a radio program here on our network, the Time for an Awakening System. And they come on Monday evenings. It's called Black Therapy Central. And they talk about some of the same kinds of principles and ideas of the work that Dr. Ashanti was doing and what he was attempting to do. So that's why we're doing this. This is not a hero worship. So let me see if my classmate, too, as well, and Dr. Ashanti's classmate might want to say something. Good afternoon, Ms. Graham. Are you there?
Yeah.
Would you want to say something about our dear brother?
Well, you know, I had left Hillside in 11th grade. You know, I went to Durham High.
That's right. You sure did. You sure did.
Now who is this, Roger?
This is Brenda Graham.
You know who I am. I'm Sheila Dunn. You remember Sheila?
Oh, you Sheila? I thought you was. Hey, see, you know, I know you. I thought you would.
I'm Sheila's sister.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Graham is her married name. That's her married name.
I got you.
Sheila Suckett is her married name. But I'm Brenda Graham.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Brenda, what do you remember about our dear brother doing the earlier years, 10th grade, so I guess 11th, and even at Whitney?
You know, I kind of remember him as being, you know, he was kind of quiet, but he always, when he opened his mouth, he'd always have something to say. And he was, you know, he just kind of struck me as being real close to what he believed in, you know.
Right.
That's about all I can remember, because it's been a while. I haven't lived in Durham in so long.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
I'm in Atlanta now.
Oh, you're in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, okay.
Right, yeah. Right. But I do. But we were all there together, and I keep forgetting that Mrs. Graham. She was one of those first test cases of integration.
Yeah, at Durham High. Yeah.
Going to Durham High. She. The very first one.
You know, we lived over there in Brookstown.
Right, that's right. Because you remember one of the first test cases was Floyd McKissick's daughter.
Right, we were in school together.
Right, and Larry Scurlock.
Mm-hmm. Dawson and Larry.
Larry Scurlock, yep.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first to go to Durham High, and like I said, it was a test model case.
I went that next year, you know, they were a year older than me.
Right. Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's interesting stuff, too. And maybe sometime on another program.
Sometime we could get on that.
Yeah, I want to do that, because I'd like for you to explain what happened when you were there in that all-white system.
Yeah, it was a lot going on during that time.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, exactly right. And for our listening audience who may not be aware, Durham, North Carolina is... Raleigh is the capital, but Durham is known for tobacco. The Liggett & Myers Tobacco Company, the American Tobacco Company, and the Duke family are very critical systems in Durham. The Duke University is there. It's the home of Duke University. And it makes for a strange kind of... making. There's the pot of soup that comes out of Durham is strange, and you really would have to get into it a little bit. Dr. Bridges, what I'd like to do is I would like to play for our audience a clip that Ashanti he did, and for anybody that's interested in getting deeper into his work, you might want to go to YouTube and take a look at an interview that he did at the Black and Noble Bookstore, the Black and Nobel Bookstore in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it's on YouTube. And it's a lengthy conversation. It's 30 minutes. But I took about a three-minute clip of it to play for our discussion tonight. So if it's okay with you, Dr. Bridges, you want me to go to that?
Yeah, that would be good, about 3 minutes. Right, yeah, that's good. And going real well. I'd like to hear that myself. Uh-huh.
Okay, all right, so let me do this. This is an interview that the owner of the bookstore was doing with Dr. Ashanti about his book and his work, which then will lead us into the next area of his work that we want to talk about. So, listen to this.
If I may, what made you write the manuscript for Manless Us? Yes. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. Durham, North Carolina is the home of North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company and Palmer & Candace Bank, the biggest black insurance company in the world and the richest black banks in the world. That's my home. We took for granted college-educated people, black professors. We just took that for granted. And so consider ourselves super hardship like the rest of the United States with black people. But we thought we were just as good, not better than white people. But even though we had all these things, we still want to progress. And when we watch the news and TV all across the country, we recognize that, hey, we need to do something too. So we did our part. But I had just graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in 1974, and we would have study groups in the evening after I got on work. I was teaching at North Carolina Central University. Okay. So we had maybe about 12 young brothers, sitting on the five, and then some community people would come, and we talked and stuff. We didn't have black studies then. Mm. We didn't have a black bookstore, none of that. But from these discussions and things like we got in, we said, why don't we start a black bookstore? And somebody said, yeah, let's do that. We didn't. We just talking. So we thought that to do that, then the rest of the community would be conscious like we were.
Right.
So one night, I was in my kitchen, sitting there drinking some vodka and orange juice. I was about 32 years old. And I was home by myself. And I decided to write something about the role of white people in slavery. I had read a book called The Black Jacobins. And in that book talks about how brutal slavery was in the South. I had read some books about slavery, but they were not brutal like that in the South.
Right.
I mean, in Haiti. So, but anyway, I wrote this document outlining the brutality of slavery. And then it was two pages, front and back. And then the more I thought about it, I said, what am I going to call this thing? And the more I thought about it, I know one thing they did a lot of slavery was lynch people. So there's a town called Lynchburg, Virginia,
right,
about 60 miles from Durham.
Right.
And I thought about that. Now, I was wondering, I said, I bet you that's with Lynchburg, that's the name because there must have been a lot of black people there. So I said, And we used to have a sort of like a name like you have now for black people. And if it was a male, it was Willie. You might have a name we call male here, not some kind of name, but it was Willie. So I say Willie Lynch. And that's how the name Willie Lynch came to be.
Wow.
Then I put that on the letter, Xerox on the old Army machine. And at 12 o'clock midnight, I put them in my car. I ran 500 copies. I just rode all over town, dropping them off, washes, places like that, where people would pick them up. They wouldn't necessarily see who did it because of that 12 o'clock at night.
Right.
So that's what I did. And I didn't tell anyone in my group close.
Okay. The very clearly, this is Dr. Ashanti's version. It's a longer version on YouTube, so be sure to make sure that you listen to that and you get more into it. But now, this is something that I wanted to share with you, coming straight out of his mouth to me one day on a telephone conversation. We were on the phone for about an hour and a half talking about some stuff. And he was getting ready to plan a trip to Africa. And he wanted me to see if I could definitely go with him. And he was, even if you can, you know, kind of help me with some of the narration, and I was willing to do that. I was really looking forward to doing that. But lately there's been a something that's going around YouTube saying that this was not true, that he didn't write that, and so all that stuff, you know. But very clearly, it's incorrect. And where the Willie Lynch letter came from, and what it was, and what it meant, and how significant it was. And that's what Dr. Bridges and I wanted to talk about tonight, because very clearly, to kind of put the record straight based on what he knew. As I told you, Dr. Bridges owned a bookstore, one of the best bookstores in the United States. And he has some understanding of how things work. Dr. Sante told me that he got the eye, what he did, and you heard part of his description that he said in this clipping. They were in the bookstore live, and there were a lot of people around, so that's why it was kind of a little difficult trying to hear. But Dr. Sante said that he had read another book back in the early 60s, called The Man Who Cried I Am. And it was written by, that author was John Williams. And the name of the book was The Man Who Cried I Am. He said what he had done in that book was a work of genius, because what he did, he had a document that he created, a fictional document was created in that book called The King Alfred Plan. And the King Alfred Plan was a plan that supposedly the FBI and the CIA were going to do and use if the riots that were happening in the cities in America continued, and if they had to quarantine black people off from the city. And they would do this using this plan called King Alfred. King Alfred was a Norwegian king back in the 1300s, 1200s. That was cruel and brutal. But anyway, this plan would be where they would rope them off and do all kinds of things. But it was a fictitious document. It was a part of his book, The Man Who Cried I Am. So what John Williams decided to do is photocopy parts of that King Alfred plan and go around the city of New York and leave copies laying around everywhere. Put them on the subway, just leave them on the bench and let them just sit. Go in the libraries, leave them in the library, and eventually, you know, somebody will come by, pick them up, or either throw them away or what. But you do that enough, and what happened is, and this is according to John Williams' words that he said in an interview once, that people began, he said about 4 months, he was hearing stuff all over the place about this King Alfred plan. And even to the point that the government was saying that it was fictitious, that nobody from the government wrote that this wasn't true, but the plan was realistic, based on the J. Edgar Hoover plan of the COINTELPRO and some of the things that the FBI was doing around that time, and so that became a powerful weapon and tool of marketing. And so Ashanti told me on the phone, he said, I decided to do something just like that. And what I did is I took this document that we created based on his psychological training and his understanding of brainwashing and what happened and what could possibly have happened in the slave system and what could have made white people do the things that they were doing in slavery, to create this document he called the Willie Lynch Letter. And he went around to places and just left it. He went into the libraries and schools and just left it in the library laying around. And he said months went by, and he said he ain't hear nothing. Nobody said nothing. It was 4 or 5 months. And then all of a sudden, there was a conference, and they were talking about the Willie Lynch letter. And then he said later he found a book that was published by somebody. They didn't put their name on it, but it was had some additional things added to it called How to Make a Slave. And they added that to the Willie Lynch book, his original writing, and that became what was known as the Willie Lynch document. And I'm sure there's more to it. Now, he does talk about it in this interview that he did as well. But that's how this came about. Now, Dr. Bridges, I want to ask you, I know you carried several books in your bookstore on the Willie Lynch letter and concept. Is that correct? Am I correct?
Yeah, I did, of course. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about people that might have come in and wanted to purchase it and wanted to know who is that and where this come from. Did you ever have a discussion in the book? Because you had a lot of discussions that you used to have. Did you ever do a discussion on the Willie Lynch letter? And did you know that at that time when you were doing it that Dr. Ashanti wrote it?
No, because I and now that you mention the time period, that really might be true. But at the time, no, to answer your question, no, I did not. But we did have several discussions about it, and I've done some reading on it, too, you know, on the Internet about some other origins of it. But but based on what you just said, it may very well, especially when you compared it and looked at it in the similarity to the King Alfred plan and how that was done. So that could very well have been true. But I do remember one thing that you said, which I did not know until you said it, and that is when they added that other part to it. When I first saw it, it was just the short version of it. But then later on, I got another copy from somewhere, which was not even out in the book form. It was just somebody that copied it, just like you said, Dr. Shanta said he had done off of a Xerox machine, but there was a copy, and then they added on How to Make a Slave. And what they did was compare the making of a slave to the same way that you train a horse. And they also talked about it in terms of the way the black man would treat the black woman, was also how that was actually derived from our treatment on the plantation. So it started off as the thing that's what you said that Dr. Ashanti himself had written, but then there was another part added on. The next thing I know, it came out as a book, and it was published by Lucina Books out of Chicago. They put it into a little pamphlet, and you've seen it kind of gold
right,
and yellow.
Yeah, I've
color.
Seen that. Uh-huh. I had a copy
exactly.
of it.
Exactly, and then it came. But that was not the original. Even before that came out like that, I had a copy, just a Xerox copy of it. So that could very well be true, and that's a good discussion. But you're right about that.
Right. Now, this came from Ashanti's mouth to me one day on the telephone.
Right. He came right out with it. And, you know, another thing, too, that to anybody who wants to doubt it, just like you said, that King Alfred plan, they can look at what it says, and we can see what Willie Lynch, whether or not he existed. We're not talking about that. But we can definitely see that plan is in action in terms of keeping the light skin separated from the dark skin, the educated from the miseducated, and the hair texture and all those things. So King Alfred may not have existed, in other words, but what he was saying, we can see it in real life. It's a fact. I mean, it actually happened to us as a people, everything that's in that Willie Lynch letter and more.
Right, right. And I think that's a powerful legacy that Dr. Ashanti left us, is that.
Right.
And using that technique, because he said, if I would have put my name on it and say that I did it, then it would not have had the impact.
That it did have, right.
That's right, which is what John Williams said. In
same thing with the King Alpha plan. Exactly.
King, right.
That's a good technique, right? So, right. And just stay. He stayed in the background, but just let the work begin to nourish itself and grow, and then spread out everywhere. Because I've got so many cases where I've heard people quoting the Willie Lynch letter, Khalid Muhammad, and people at psychological conventions, and so
everybody does that. You know, Ray Nagin. And Dr. Ray Nagin, he created a whole system of teaching the Willie Lynch letter. People were using it as textbooks.
And then it was in the movie. What movie was that in? I think it was in the movie Monster or something. Somebody came out of jail and read the Willie Lynch letter and movies and everything.
Yep, that's right. So this is the work of the man that we are talking about tonight. And that's some of the legacy. Because I want to deal with a recent video that has just come out that talks about the Willie Lynch letter too. And this book, this document that's very powerful. In the same way, one of our producers for the Black Reality Think Tank, Brother Kwasi Kraft, has a program called Warrior's Way, and he did a piece on buck breaking, the system of buck breaking. Well, the brother that did the what's the name of that series of videos that that they did? They did like 1, 2, 3, and 4. Dr. Bridges, I can't think of it. It's slipping my mind right now.
I'm trying to. Yeah. Maybe one of our callers might can think.
I'm pretty sure Brother Griffin. Brother Griffin, if you can put that up there. What's that 4-part, 5-part series that the brother created? About different things, and then he's just done a new one now called Buck Break It, and they deal with the Willie Lynch concept in there. If you can remember that, it's right on the tip of my tongue. I can't think about it because I got all 4 copies of it. You had them in your bookstore, and you know that's what old age will do for you, won't it, Dr. Bridges? But anyway, I want to talk about that, but I want to do a quick break and go to the top of the hour, take a quick break, and come right back. And then I'm going to open up the lines and just let's do a free for all discussion. It doesn't have to be about Dr. Ashanti. It can be about this psychology system of understanding what happened to us in slavery, which is what we need to have in order to undo it, to clean that brainwashing. We're going to have to understand what was done first, and I don't think we've done that.
Greek machine.
We haven't
hidden
done.
Color.
I'm sorry. I said hidden colors. That's it. Thank you, sir.
Tariq Nasheed.
Say it again.
Tariq Nasheed.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, okay, let's take this quick break, and we're going to come right back and talk a little bit about that and then talk about that whole psychology method of what happened in slavery, what happened to us, and why is it that we've got to keep that out there and talk about it so we can better understand what really happened. So, we'll take a quick break and come right back.
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir,
however frustrating the hour, it will not be long, because truth crushed the earth will rise again.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne.
Yes, sir.
Yet that scaffold sways the future.
Yes.
Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yes, sir.
How long?
Not long.
Because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yes,
he's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Yes, sir.
He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword.
Yes,
his truth is marching on.
Yes, sir.
He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat.
Peace,
he is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat.
Yes,
oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on.
Yes.
Glory, hallelujah.
Yes,
glory, hallelujah.
It's 1972, an election year, and once again, black people are running for their lives. Reasons are things like the King Alfred Plan, the concentration camps that were used during the Second World War to house Oriental Americans are now being refurbished to confine their new residents, i.e. black people. Brothers and sisters, there is a place for you in America. This is the King Alfred Plan. Brothers and sisters, there is a place for you in America. Places are being prepared and ready night and day, night and day. The white boy's plan is being ready night and day, night and day. Listen close to what rap say about traps like Allenwood, PA. Already legal in D.C. to preventively detain you and me. How long you think it's going to be before even our dreams ain't free? You think I exaggerate? Check out Allenwood, PA. Night and day, night and day. The white boy scheming night and day. The Jews and Hitler come to mind, the thought of slavery far behind, but white paranoia's here to stay, the white boys scheming night and day. What you think about the King Alfred Plan? You ain't heard? Where you been, man? If I may paraphrase, the government notice reads, should there at any time become a clear and present danger initiated by any radical element threatening the operations of the government of the United States of America, members of this radical element shall be transported to detention centers until such time as their threat has been eliminated. Code King Alfred. Bullshit, I bet you say. There ain't no Allenwood, PA, and people ain't waiting night and day, night and day, night and day. There will be, without the Motown sound and Thunderbird wallowing in the echoes of Malcolm's words, there must be black unity. There must be black unity, for in the end, unity will be thrust upon us and we upon it and each other. Locked in cages, pens, hemmed in, shoulder to shoulder, arms outstretched for just a crust of bread, watermelon mirages, an oasis that does not exist, conjured up by the bubbling stench, unwashed bodies and unsanitary quarters, concrete and barbed wire, babies screaming, stumbling around in a mental circle because you never cared enough to be black. In the end, unity will be thrust upon us, blanketed, stifled, a salty taste in your mouth from blood oozing from cracks in woolly heads, red pools becoming thicker than syrup, slow down your face, birds matted by the life force, sprung loose from wells, well deep by the enforcers of mock justice of the red, white, and blue. In the end, unity will be thrust upon us. Let us unite because of love and not hate. Let us unite on our own and not because of barbed wire death. You dare not ignore the things I say. Whitey's waiting night and day, night and day, night and day, night and day.
Time for an awakening media lineup. All about times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective with host Brother Oshi. On Monday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. On Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m., on the first and third Mondays of each month, Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening, from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Africa Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. From 8 to 10 p.m., on Friday evenings. Time for an awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, sisters and brothers, and I just want to remind all of you that we have one other program that has been added to our Thursday schedule. It's called The Warrior's Way. Continuing the Fight. And the host of that is Brother Kwasi Kraft. It comes on Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. So check him out as well. All of our programs are archived. All you need to do is go to the website, Time for an Awakening website, www.timeforanawakening.com. I repeat, www.timeforanawakening.com. And go to the search portal and pull down any of our programs. Put in the name of the program that you'd like to see. And by all means, you can listen to all of them. We've been on the air now about 7 years. and some of the others have not been that long. But all of the programs are there. And you can listen to them. So tonight we are giving tribute to my dear classmate and brother, Dr. Kwabena Brahim Ashanti. A brilliant brother, a dynamic mind that has definitely left us his legacy, and he has gone to the ancestral realm of things. And so Dr. Bruce Bridges is here with us, author of the book Recapturing the African Mind, owner of one of the great bookstores of America, the No Books. He's here with us, helping us to navigate through this. And now we want to kind of go to you, the audience, and see what we can talk, and you can talk about some of the things that we are doing. And a lot of this is the psychology of oppression, the psychology of our enslavement. This system that we were put upon when Africa was invaded by the Euro-Arab world, when they went into Africa, and took our brothers and sisters and our mothers and foremothers and great-grandmothers and great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers out of that continent and brought them to these foreign lands of North and South America and Europe to work under some of the most brutal conditions that has ever existed on the planet Earth. That was a psychology process. And so people like Dr. Ashanti, Dr. Wade Nobles, the Cambones, and some of the others who have been studying diligently to wake black people up to this condition. We are losing our kids every day. I got an app on my phone, and I'm getting ready to take that damn thing off. It brings you bulletins, news things right away that happens in your local community. Do you know how many times during the day I get hit with somebody that's gotten shot in Milwaukee or killed right here in Milwaukee? Milwaukee's not that big of a city. It's not a New York or it's not a L.A., but people are dying here. These kids are dying here, and a lot of it is from each other. That's a mental problem. That's a psychology problem. That's what Dr. Ashanti was trying to do when he wrote the book about brainwashing and redoing the brainwashing. And Dr. Bridges mentioned some of his books. I'm going to mention them again too, so that you know. And I will say, unfortunately, these books are selling for $400 and $500 at Amazon, if even they have it. But there's the one book that Dr. Bridges mentioned is called The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, The Afrocentric Passage. The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, Afrocentric Passage. And it's somehow he had developed a technique to be able to get into the inner core of thinking or the mind of people and to be able to get them to see and move some brain cells around. And I'm not a psychologist, so I can't describe it totally how it's done. But it was a unique system. And it was so unique that people were coming to Dr. Ashanti from everywhere to get him to do some work. Things like the deprogramming that happens to young people when they get caught up into these cults. He was able to have a system to break that. And on top of that, he was using the African Wudun system as well. He had been installed as a Yoruba chief and was able to use all of that, you know, in terms of his work. So that's one book that was very, very helpful that I think you would find critical. And the other one was Root Work and Voodoo in Mental Health. Root Work and Voodoo and Mental Health. And we're again talking about how to get into the mind. Things like, you know, we've heard some of the pop psychology stuff like hypnosis and all of that. But no. It's deeper than that. It goes deeper than that. I don't know how many of you saw the movie Get Out. And some of that was in that movie Get Out. When the white woman had captured the brother, and all she had to do was hit her teacup 3 or 4 times, and it put him in a trance. Some of that kind of stuff. There's some reality to that, and like I said, I didn't get into the conversation with Dr. Ashanti that long about the specifics of the techniques, but I did read the book. That was one of the books I bought from Dr. Bridges' bookstore, Root Work and Voodoo in Mental Health, and he talked about how to do that. And then there was another publication that he had done, that this was kind of compiled together after he had created the Willie Lynch letter. He did another book, The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, and he included things in there. He had something called Crucifying, and the whole philosophical, theological perspective of crucifying. Not just from the biblical stuff. There's another part of that. There's something else about that system of punishment that's devastating. And he covers that. I didn't read this particular book, but that's there. And he also brings that into the Willie Lynch letter. That's another book. If you go, you can go on Amazon, put in his name, and they'll bring up these books. But like I said, they're not available. You can't get them, or either you'll pay $400 for them. And then that one other book, and I didn't know about this one, Dr. Bridges. I didn't know if you did. He wrote a book called Afrocentric Funerals and Burials, a guide. Afrocentric Funerals and Burials. Did you know about that, Dr. Bridges?
I did. Uh-huh.
Okay. Did you have that in your bookstore?
No, I don't think. I think that came out a little later. You know, I think the Pride was his last book, and I never carried that one. No, I didn't.
Okay, well, I would love to have looked at that and read it. But anyway, folks, this is what we are doing tonight, and we're talking about it. So we're going to open up the lines. Dr. Bridges is going to take back over now. Brothers and sisters, be careful. You know, as I said to you, the mics are very sensitive. Any background noise, sneezing, moving your fork and spoon around. All of that can be loud coming over through the radio. So I would like for you to be mindful of that. And like right now, I'm hearing some feedback.
I hear it too.
Yeah.
I hear it too. Yeah. I don't know where that's coming from.
But I want...
Let's ask Dr. Rogers too. because I know you got a lot of callers, maybe keep the comments kind of brief about Dr. Ashanti, and so we can kind of move through several of them.
Okay. All right. Okay. So why don't we do this? Brother Lush, how you doing tonight?
Good evening, Brother Rogers.
Good afternoon. Good evening to you. Any words or comments or thoughts?
Yeah, real quick, and as always, coming on this program, I'm learning something new and different. The question that I have is, does North Carolina Central University have copies in their archives that could be available at all?
Oh, really? Why don't you tell us about that a little bit, Brother Lush? Because I know you turned me on to a couple of books that was at Alabama State.
I'm sure that each HBCU has an archive or has a special collection division within their library. And so I'm curious, if we can't find it out here, would NCCU have copies of his work there that could possibly be accessible and on a temporary basis? Because when you mentioned Afrocentric Funerals and Burials, a guide, I would love to have that one to review. Because, you know, one thing about us as Black people, we have a difficulty mourning. And so if there were, like with regards to pouring libations, et cetera, doing some incantations of sorts that we could learn for ourselves,
yes,
we could have a better appreciation of that transition that an elder, or anyone for that matter, would make and be able to stay in touch. So I'm just kind of curious. I'm going to call NCCU.
You know, Brother Lush, I think what would be a good idea is within the next, well, that may be closing, within the next few days, give the library a call and tell them what you're looking for, and leave your number if they don't have time to do it right then, but get back with you and see if they might have that one. Because I was thinking about that one, too, when Dr. Rogers mentioned it. That would definitely be a good one to have when, you know, with funerals and burials. So why don't you make that call? That might be a good way to find out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Like,
and the same thing, Brother Lush, just let us know. Maybe one come back on and you can share with us the possibility.
Whether or not they have it. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Sure. Yeah. We'll definitely do that. We'll definitely share.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Lush. I appreciate you as well. Let me, Brother Devon, did you want to say something else? Okay, maybe not. What about you, Dr. Maxwell? How are you doing tonight? I'm so glad you're feeling better and up and at it again. Dr. Maxwell? Might have your phone.
Maybe he's not feeling better than I thought.
He might have his phone muted, and then, you know, doesn't really, you know, sometimes you don't realize that it's muted.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come back.
Who else we got? We got another. Any first time
so
callers?
Dr. Maxwell, Dr. Maxwell, we'll come back.
With the board, his phone doesn't seem to be muted.
Yeah, I think it might be. Dr. Griffin, Dr. Griffin. You are Dr. Griffin. You're there. You, any comments you want to make? I know you just sent me something about a little short bio that you found on Dr. Ashanti. But anything you want to add to this discussion?
Oh, no, sir. I always come to class with pen in hand. I yield to those who have the experience.
Right. Okay.
But I did share that 2013 letter with you from a gentleman that was saying he was at a book club in Durham when he met Dr. Kwabena.
Mm-hmm.
And Kwabena. And he talks about that. Actually has a quote in the letter. I remember that. God, I didn't realize it was 8 years ago.
Right.
But yeah, I just went through my bookmarks and gave it to you.
Exactly.
In the chat.
And see, that's the kind of guy that Dr. Ashanti was. He didn't necessarily want fame and fortune. He was just trying to get to our people. Just trying to educate, you know, and so.
Right.
So he anonymously put that out it spread all over the place, and it's still now being used and studied. Dr. Brother Kwazi, you did a program maybe about a month ago on buck breaking. What was the psychology of that buck breaking? Give us a little background, because very clearly this ties into what Dr. Shanti was trying to do and talk about in the trauma that has been laid upon us out of slavery. So talk a little bit about buck breaking.
Oh, wow. Can you hear me pretty good?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
Okay. When we, did that show and we're talking about how they would try to produce more slaves by so-called breeding the help from one slave to the next. And at times when you found people that were resistant to it, families, you would take a family, the strong man in the family, to make him feel unappreciated and weak and demean his authority and his manly figure in front of the family, they would have maybe someone else, it might be either another slave or a white male, rape him in front of his family.
Right, that's right. Rape or him in front even, of his kids.
Or even his kids. Mm-hmm. And they would do those type of things to show that they have no power over them. And that trauma, that continued to plague the minds of the wives, where they felt their husbands couldn't protect them anymore. So they would sleep. They were raped by the white men, but they knew that they couldn't protect them. They couldn't be protected. Their sons, daughters, and being shipped away. And just the...
Yeah, that you're right. And the video that's out now talks about that, the fact that they would rape the male in front of his wife and children, so that it would show that you don't depend on him. He can't do anything for you. You depend on us and the system that did that. You're right. And that was a very good discussion, Brother Kwasi. I thank you so much for that. What are you doing this week on your program on Thursday? Brother Kwasi? Brother Kwasi? Okay. All right, he's going. All right, let me go to 8502, 919. 919-8502.
Hello. Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Oh, good night, brother. I knew that was you. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Good evening to everybody on the show.
Did you remember Ashanti when you got to Hillside?
No, unfortunately, I never had the pleasure of meeting the brother.
Okay.
But from the things that y'all are talking about, I can understand the value of his work.
Yes.
I've seen there's been a lot of programs on about the Tulsa massacre because of the 100-year anniversary.
Yes.
Right.
And they talk about how economically viable Tulsa was, and the businesses and the stores and their own airplanes and banks and all of that. But it wasn't the economics that made Black Wall Street. It was the culture.
Yes. Yes.
If you don't have the culture.
Yes.
Then the economics is not going to help you, because you'll use the economics to destroy yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you are not rooted in your culture, and you have the economics and you have the money, instead of opening a bookstore like Brother Bruce did, you open a liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Good point. Excellent point.
So what the brother was doing was in bringing us back to our culture. Mm-hmm. That's what Haiti was. It was the culture.
It was the culture.
The people wasn't trying to outdo each other and to run each other out of business and I have the biggest business, I have the most, it was about working together. It was the culture.
That's right. And that's important. That's excellent, Brother White. That's right on target.
And right on time, too, because they've been doing a lot on television and radio and everything about this 100th anniversary of the bombing of Tulsa. So that's definitely right on time. That's right. That's another whole subject too. That whole Tulsa thing.
It
Brother
is.
Herb, I hope you're getting all those too and putting them and compiling them because I want to come by and watch all those Tulsa poems.
Right. Exactly.
Good.
Sister Graham, I don't know. She's still on. Let me see. Yeah, you're still on. Brenda, do you remember at Lyme Park when this was our elementary school? She and I were at Lyme Park together as well too, as well as Hillside 62 and all that. Do you remember when we used to have the Savings Club? And that you were supposed to put a quarter a week in a savings account, and at the end of the school year, whoever saved the most money got some extra money or something like that. They put in that. You remember that?
I kind of remember that.
Okay.
I think Miss Grissom had us doing that thing.
No, I think it was the whole school because I remember that Mr.
Well, you know, I mean, she was like the lady in charge.
Yeah, right, in charge of that. Because Mr. Burnett would read the on the PA system.
On the loudspeaker.
Yeah, loudspeaker. Right.
Intercom. Mm-hmm.
But that was designed to teach us how to save and to save our money. Yeah. And like it was a quarter, dime or nickel, you didn't care. But the person that saved the most money, I think they got a little extra.
They matched it or something, and somebody gave more when you graduated.
That's exactly right. And that's what that's what Brother White's talking about. He's talking about that cultural thing. That was a culture that was created in the school system, the education system. That's not there anymore. You know, people are not doing that anymore.
Don't teach anything that you can use when you get out.
Exactly. Let me go to 301-860, Washington, D.C. 301-860.
Yes, this is Wahida Shakur.
Oh, yes, ma'am, and, sister. How you doing? How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And how are you, Dr. Rogers?
Doing great. How's your son?
He is in North Carolina.
Okay.
He's doing as well as can be expected at this time.
Okay. All right. You got my prayers.
I did meet Dr. Shante more than likely in the No Book Store.
Okay.
I remember meeting him in the No Book Store. I did not know him, you know, the way you all know him. But, I believe he was at a conference that I went to in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
which was for African centered health or medicine.
Okay, probably so. Probably so. Yep.
Yeah, and there I had met a woman from Senegal. There were people there from all over the country, Native Americans. People from Africa, and I met a Madam Fatou Sek, who was from Senegal.
Mm.
And later, I kept a relationship with her. I went to Senegal and had a health problem and went to her for that health problem.
Mm-hmm.
And she used African spiritual healing. And she healed me. When I came back and went back to the doctor, what they was going to cut out wasn't there anymore.
Right.
So I had some experience with African spirituality when it came to medicine.
Powerful.
And I believe that Dr. Shanti was one of the presenters at that conference in South Carolina.
Or I wish I could have known what it is that he did. What was the name again? What was the name of the group?
You know, I'm getting old too. I cannot remember the name. It's a well-known group, and it was put together by some African Americans, you know, here in the United States.
Okay.
But they had people there who were from all over the country. and some things that I had thought about in terms of Native American spirituality came to fruition, you know, by my meeting them and listening to their conversations and all things that, you know, that I just had an inkling of. But there it was in living color.
Right.
And then, you know, like I said, I had a relationship with Madame Fatou Sek, who was from Senegal.
Wow.
And just before she passed, she was coming to the United States and was going to be here a while, and I was going to host her.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually died just before she was supposed to get on the airplane. I was waiting for them to call me to pick her up from the airport, and they called me and told me that she had passed. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of relationship I had formed with her and her family. From Senegal, because I had other friends that I knew in Senegal, so it was easy for me to go there and you know, spend some time with her.
Right, exactly.
But I did meet Dr. Shante. I believe he was a part of that group.
I would think that he would be.
I'm trying to think of where in South Carolina it was. It was in a place that was one of the first schools that was for African Americans after the Civil War.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think Ashanti was there, Wahida, now that I remember, because I think you mentioned, and Dr. Africa, Lila Africa was there, wasn't it?
Dr. Africa was there, yes.
That's right. Ashanti was there, because you and I talked about it. You brought it back to me when you said this, the being health, because Dr. Africa was there. Mm-hmm.
What was the name of that school, my sister?
I can't remember the name of the school, but, you know, since she mentioned it too, Dr. Rogers, you know, Dr. Africa has gone on to the ancestors too.
I know. Yep, he sure had. Yep.
Right.
I think the school was right outside of, I think it's Beaufort, South Carolina.
Right, in the islands, the Gullah Geechee
right
Islands.
On the sea
island. Oh, okay, in the Gullah Islands, okay.
That's right. Right.
In the Gullah Islands, But this particular place that we were in had been one of the first schools that was open for African Americans after the Civil War. And it was near some place where they had a battle.
Right.
Okay. So it doesn't come to me right now. But remember it was in right outside of Beaufort, South Carolina.
Right.
Right, that's right. In the Sea Islands area of South Carolina, that's right. Yeah, but Shanti was there, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, good. Well, you see, the thing that's important that for us to understand too is, and I keep interjecting this as we're talking. One of the things that
first major battle of the Civil War in South Carolina.
Yes.
Okay. But one of the things that I wanted us to keep in mind as we are talking, and this is what these great scholars and thinkers were doing, is that everything that African people do is spiritual. Everything we do has a spiritual nature to it. Cooking food is spiritual. Has a spiritual nature to cooking. When we know Big Mama and all of them were cooking those dinners on Sunday, there was a spiritual realm to that. The seasoning and spices that they used were based on spiritual understandings of things and what they did to help the body and so forth. Everything that we did was that. And this is what people like Dr. Shanti was trying to tell us in his work, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Dr. Wade Nobles, Dr. Wrote the Intellectual Warfare. He was doing the same thing, that it has a spiritual realm to it, and we cannot get away from that. And that's what has happened. We've taken that out of us, and we no longer do that. Reverend Michael Rogers does a program on Monday nights called Gospel Gold, and he's been talking about the history of spiritual music, and not just the hallelujah to it, but what it does, what it did for us, how it helped us get through the week, and how it helped us get through the day, you know, to be able to embrace those songs and those words and the spiritual music and move us. R&B, the blues, jazz, all of that's African spiritual work. And that's what Dr. Shanti's work was about, and that's what he was trying to do. Dr. Bridges, you mentioned that you were doing something with him out at Camp Butner in North Carolina. Didn't you tell me something that you said you were doing there? Dr. Bridges?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, wasn't there something you were doing with him in Butner? You said.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was on a list of speakers that the inmates at Butner Institution were having to come in and speak for Black History Month, and I was one of the weekly speakers that they had for the month of February back in about 1980, 81, I think it was. And Dr. Ashanti was on that bill also. He came in and did a session on brainwashing, and the brothers really, really, really enjoyed it, because after he did it, some of them, you know, called my store, wanted to order copies of his book. So, yeah, that was another thing that I had done with Dr. Ashanti also.
Okay. It was a prison at the time, too, wasn't it? Was he speaking
When I said Butner, yeah, Butner, the Federal Correctional Institute at Butner, FCI Butner.
Right,
Federal
so he was speaking to the inmates. Uh-huh. He was talking to inmates?
Yeah, inmates, okay. as a matter of fact. We don't have time to get into it now, but yeah, I've spoken there, and as a matter of fact, they banned me from speaking there. We'll talk about that one night. I couldn't go there for another 5 or 7 years or so, okay. But that's another story.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's,
yep. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
But yeah, FCI Butner.
Okay, all right. And Brother Timothy, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want any more people on hold who we hadn't gotten to that might want to make some comments about Dr. Ashanti.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the screen, so I've called on everybody that we have. I'm just kind of going back and forward now.
Okay, I had a brother out of Fayetteville who knew him in Fayetteville when he was teaching at Fayetteville State University. He was a 910.
Yeah, but he's not answering.
You
said 910. No, that's not on here. Dr. Maxwell, but he's on. Dr. Maxwell, are you there yet? Okay, because he's on the line. He says, mic is open.
Right. I got you. No problem. No problem.
All right. So, Brother Timothy, any thoughts? Brother Timothy?
Dr. Rogers, I'm going to say this, that I heard about this guy, and he's cut from the same mold as you and Dr. Bridges. I say that I never met him. But people like that, anytime they take and put in themselves and give back, that's a hell of a person, you know. Y'all talk about him, so he had to be great.
Yeah,
you know. And diamonds cut diamonds, man.
That's right.
And you know, y'all are diamond cutters, and I'm a diamond cutter. We gonna cut some more diamonds. That's what the next generation needs. They need to hear this so they can cut some diamonds, you know.
All right. Brenda, Ms. Graham. You ever thought about what is it about Durham? And you know, Dr. Ashanti spoke about it in that clip a little bit, not deep, but is it anything? What do you think of? Have you ever thought about what makes Durham has gotten that unique thing that you bring some great minds that come out of there? It's not to say, and I'm not trying to hone in and say that there's no great minds in other places. But that's for a small town like that. That's a small town, you know, compared to, you know, your other places.
Oh, definitely.
Even here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Durham, Milwaukee would swallow Durham up, you know. But Milwaukee's not big. You ever thought about what that is, where that's coming from? Why is it that we were the way we were? What is it that produced a Dr. T.C. Graham? Even back then, you know, Dr. Graham was a powerful man. You know that, because So what do you think? What was that? What was it about Durham, from your thoughts? Just your opinion.
I just think we were unique because our ancestors were unique.
Right.
You know, like, I think about Brooks town that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never thought, but Brooktown, Haytie, you know, where we went to school and stuff, people were just all together, you know, and they taught us to love one another and to be close, and they were like you doing tonight. I'm learning more than I knew, because I've been kind of out of the realm of Black history, I guess, you
right.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But our ancestors taught us about these kind of things, you know. And we, you know, a big part is about education, why we had to go to school and stuff. They didn't make us, but they you know, they encouraged us.
Mm. Right, exactly, exactly.
And I just think Durham is just unique anyway for the black community.
Right, right.
You know, for blacks. And
well, thank you for that. That's good, because I surely agree, 100% agree with you. Thank you. Brother Devon, you still on, Brother James?
Yes, I'm still here.
What is it you think about that make Durham so unique? What is it about Durham that would have created Dr. Asante, or James Devon, or Bruce Bridges, you know,
or Dr. Rogers.
What is it about that Dr. city? What is it about that, Devon? What you think? What do you think?
I think the inhabitants, the people who fought and walked and did everything, marched coming out of this area.
Right.
They set an example for leadership, and it's all carried on into the future.
Right.
That's what I think about it.
That's it. Because I remember you, James, working with Mr. Tucker, and how you all, as students, built that house in the brick mason class. We had a brick mason class. What was it, 11th, 12th grade? You all built a house.
Yeah.
And then had the house moved.
Yeah.
1961, 62. Black folk.
Yeah.
All black folk. That was a work of genius.
And what I'm thinking is that we're losing our heritage, because, you know, there are things that are right in front of people that they don't sometimes see.
Right.
And I'll have to talk with you later about something I want to put out to the public. I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to hoard this show or trying to do something selfish.
Right. No, I know, James. You know, and see, we ain't talked about all the stuff you did. You were an inventor. You had invented some things that even Jet Magazine put you on the on the cover because you had invented these products. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time to talk about it right now. But maybe in the future. You know.
Okay, let me just tell them to see that at Google Images. And put January 15th, 1976, Jet Magazine.
Okay, all right, all right.
And then they will see that in the middle page.
Good. Okay, Brother White, what you think? What was the deal?
It's hard to explain, but it goes back to the culture and the spirituality.
Right.
And the connectiveness of the people.
That's it. And that was a slaveholding town now. You know, Durham had a history of slavery.
Of the people.
Right.
I remember going to school in the morning. Me and Charles Clinton used to walk to school, and he used to thumb a ride, and people would pick him up. Nobody never picked you. You didn't thumb no ride in New York City.
No, you bet not.
You know, people pick you up.
Exactly.
I remember if you stopped your car and you had a problem with your car and you opened the hood, it would be less than 3 minutes before somebody would stop to help you.
Yeah.
Whether they knew you or not.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay. Well,
Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Dr. Rogers, out of respect for my son, I would like to take the opportunity, if I may, have the opportunity.
You got about 1 minute before we go off. Go ahead.
Go to GoogleImages.com and put Devon Kobe Bryant lookalike in GoogleImages.com.
Okay.
And then put Devon Samsung self photos. They might have a phone like being shown, and it could be something that could be financially beneficial to them.
Right. And that's
Devon Kobe Bryant lookalike and Yvonne Samsung self photos and Google Images.
All right. Thank you so much. And that's a part of that that traumatic experience that we deal with as people. But listen, brothers and sisters, this has been wonderful. I know hopefully Dr. Asante is listening to us in the ancestral realm. I do believe that he would be pleased with all of your input. I would do appreciate him clearly. He was a dear brother, a dear friend. He is going to be missed, but I think we have to make sure that his work lives on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I want to bring something to the audience's attention.
But
Dr. Asante,
you know what?
was one of my best friends.
Say it again.
He was one of my best friends, Dr. Asante.
Okay.
And I'm saying that we have things that could be beneficial to the African-American community throughout the world.
Right.
And all they got to do is go to Devon Samsung self photos at Google Images. They might have one of those telephones.
Okay, we got you. All right, brother Dr. Bridges, and you close us out, and we'll be ready to go home.
Well, I'd just like to say it's been a great tribute to Dr. Asante and Sister Beverly and other people who were tuned in for the first time, having to come on back and invite them to come on back and be with us again every week. Like Beverly said, she's been out of Black History for a while. So come on back into it, Beverly, and tell Sheila and other people to join us on the Black Reality Think Tank every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time till 10 o'clock.
Every Tuesday night. You said Wednesday.
Okay. Tuesday.
Yeah.
All right. Tuesday night.
Right.
Mm. Right.
Thank you so much, folks. I appreciate you. Have a very good week. We will be back next week. Don't forget to listen to Brother Kwazi on Thursday at 7 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
Or 6 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock. I'm sorry, 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. He has a dynamic discussion. I was trying to ask him what it was, but he wasn't on the line.
Can you hear me, Doc Rogers?
Yeah, but we're going off. What you going to talk about real quick?
Right, the white man's initiation to manhood.
Okay, got you. All right.
Okay.
Have a good night, folks.
Good night, Dr. Rogers.
Good night.
Thanks, man. Dr. Rogers. This could be